This evening at sundown marks the beginning of Yom Kippur, which means the Day of Atonement. It's considered the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. Because it's a solemn observance, there's a prescribed time to reflect upon life and to honor the memory of loved ones. Yizkor is the Hebrew word for remembrance, and during Yom Kippur, part of the day is set aside for Yizkor. This dedicated part of the service is considered one of the most recognized times to remember the deceased. And though Yizkor is meant to honor the memory of close relatives, in more recent decades, many congregations acknowledge the memory of those 6 million Jews who died in the Nazi Holocaust. Eugene Drucker, the violinist and founding member of the Emerson Quartet, wrote a novel set during the Holocaust called The Savior. The book is not new. It was written 9 years ago, but its setting and theme of music as redemption seemed appropriate for today. Eugene began our conversation by reading a passage from the novel.
Gottfried remembered arguing with his parents about whether or not music, in itself, without text, could provide a religious experience. At the age of 18, he had invoked the shakan as an example of music's spiritual power when he stopped going to church every Sunday. They couldn't understand. They'd never been inside a piece like that, never felt their entire bodies galvanized by the massive sweep of those arpeggios, never held their breath in the hushed hymnal phrases in D major just after the storm.
I had the sense reading this, and particularly passages like that which you just read, that while the character of Gottfried is not you, his passion and the way he expresses his thoughts about the music are very much your own.
Yes, well, I tried to put a lot of my perspective as a performing violinist into this novel. And there are some novels about music that are written by non-musicians that are quite convincing. But I thought, in addition to the particularities of this story, that I could bring an insider's point of view to the act of performing. And as it unfolds in this story, it's performing in the most extreme possible of situations.
You use flashbacks as a literary device, and in the author's note, you explain that some events in the story are based on your father's experience as a young musician in Germany. Would you tell us more about that?
Most of those events are in the fourth chapter of the novel, when the protagonist, Gottfried, meets his best friend from the conservatory in Cologne, whose name is Ernst. My father's name was Ernst, and some of the events in Ernst's background mirrored some real-life experiences that my father had. The main one is that he was scheduled to play the Brahms Violin Concerto for his graduation concert from the Musikhochschule, the conservatory in Cologne, in early July 1933. And this was several months after the Nazis had come to power. At some point in the spring, somebody from the propaganda ministry was appointed as the administrative director of the conservatory. This was somebody who was sort of superimposed on the actual administration of that conservatory. My father, having been scheduled to play the Brahms Violin Concerto with the school orchestra at his graduation concert, came to school one day and looked at the bulletin board where the printed program had been prominently posted, and saw that his name had been crossed off. So he went to his teacher, whose name was Bram Eldering, and Eldering threatened to resign if they would not reinstate my father on the program. The administrative director made a compromise with Bram Eldering that my father would be permitted to play the first movement of the concerto. Then, when the concert came, my father actually had a case of the flu, a touch of the flu. Naturally, he was determined to go on with the performance no matter what. And he did see, as he came out on stage, that the first three rows of the audience were lined with brown shirts with SA members, which must have had a a very intimidating effect on him. But he also told me that in the silence right before the orchestra began the exposition of the concerto, that he heard a cough coming from somewhere much farther back in the hall, and he actually recognized that as his own father's cough, which somehow encouraged him. The well-established newspapers in Cologne gave him very good reviews, but there was a one-sentence review from the Völkische Beobachter, the Nazi press organ, which said simply, "It is beyond our comprehension that the immortal German violin concerto of Brahms could be entrusted to a Jew." And my father wrote a letter to the editor of that paper saying, "It has escaped the attention of your critic that Brahms dedicated his, quote, immortal German violin concerto, unquote, to the Jew Joseph Joachim, who actually helped him edit the violin part, the solo part for that concerto."
Well, unlike your father, the violinist Gottfried Keller, the main character in the story, at least early on, is not heroic at all. Would you describe what happens when he's picked up by the SS early one morning?
Yes, that's in the second chapter. He is picked up by an SS driver at his home early in the morning. This unwelcome visit by an SS member creates all kinds of insecurity in him. And he's wondering, why are they picking me up? What is it that I've done that might have created suspicion? And he has some vague awareness of a camp about 15 or 20 kilometers from the small town where he lives. And he imagines it's a labor camp, but he does not understand yet that it's also an extermination camp. And when he's brought to meet the commandant, who seems surprisingly civilized and a great music lover and also a man of science, he's some kind of scientist, it is then that he learns the purpose of his being driven, having been driven to the concentration camp. And it involves an experiment. The commandant explains that every day in a camp like that is like an experiment in human endurance. And the will to survive is what fascinates him in these people. But he sees that they become more and more depressed and, from his point of view, sort of catatonic. They have very little reaction to any stimuli. They just stand there for roll call and they go about their business seemingly like automatons. And he wonders, from a purely scientific point of view, what could be done to bring them back to life in a deeper sense of the word. Therefore, he decides that since most of them had some kind of cultural background before the war, he will give them music instead. And that's why Gottfried Keller has been brought in. He's expected to play four impromptu concerts of solo violin music for these inmates over the course of the next 4 days.
When the commandant says to Gottfried, when he explains his reason for wanting him to come and play, he says he decided to give them music because what better way to remind them of their past lives, to kindle in them the hope to live again. And yet he also claims that what he describes as the Jews' intimacy with great music is part of what makes them dangerous, revives their illusion of equality. Would you talk about how the commandant, how his beliefs reflect some aspects of the German population at large during the rise of Nazism?
Yes, I think there was a sense of their own culture being a very great culture, which it was. There's no way to deny that. And in the more xenophobic corners of German society during the 19th century, there was a feeling that the ease with which Jewish people seemed to be permeating society and gaining access not only to sources of wealth through their banking activities, the fact that some of them became bankers to the kings of the various German states already in the late 18th century, but also claiming familiarity with the cultural patrimony of Germany, I'm sure, was threatening to some people who were intolerant of minorities and who thought that people from the outside couldn't possibly share in this great cultural heritage.
about the pieces that Gottfried selects to play for the prisoners? Why does he start with Paganini?
Well, it's probably the wrong choice for him. So Gottfried starts with this because he thinks it might be the best way to break through the ice, so to speak, of their apathy. But it turns out to be an inappropriate choice. It seems shrill and out of place in a setting like that. And also, he's not able to perform his best. Then he plays a partita by Bach. As he's playing that, he starts to realize that it might not make any difference how he plays or how they react. But then a certain hope, almost in spite of himself, he starts to entertain a certain hope. It says here, only there was a slight chance that if the playing was good enough, it might produce some hints of life in his listeners. Not pleasure, not understanding, just a response to a stimulus. He wasn't sure what that would mean to the commandant other than achieving the immediate goal of his bizarre experiment. An idea began to take root, though, while he was playing the graceful, poignant Luree. If music had the power to revive, the commandant might not want to send these people back to their, quote, living death. Wouldn't he be proud of his results? Wouldn't he want those results to last? Keller starts to believe, in spite of his own better judgment, that he might somehow contribute to saving the lives of this handful of prisoners who have been selected for this experiment. And of course, at the beginning, he doesn't know yet that it's a death camp, but this awareness sinks in. I think it becomes pretty apparent to him already by the dawn of the second day that he's there.
Yes, so in that, we really are seeing more of his conscience or his humanity. Do you think Gottfried is able to play his violin again? In the end, he doesn't think he can ever play again.
Right. Well, one person asked me, is there going to be a sequel? Because you seem to leave things open for the future. And I had never thought of a sequel dealing with the same character. So I guess I haven't, I didn't at the time, and I haven't completely worked it out in my head, whether he would eventually contradict himself when he said, I will never play the violin again, after realizing how his art, his relationship to music had been manipulated and put to the service of a terrible experiment. It's conceivable, though, looking back at history, that maybe after several years, when Germany started to put itself back together and life started to approach a semblance of normalcy, that he might somehow have found the courage to play the violin again. Never completely forgetting, though, what happened. I think more likely, though, that he is a completely destroyed character, that his personality, which he was already beset with all kinds of emotional problems at the beginning of the story, and these 4 days in the camp have only made things far, far worse. And he feels a great sense of guilt somehow for what happened in the camp, and that reawakens a sense of guilt he had in a couple of his own personal relationships from years earlier.
And yet, it brings to mind, Theodor Adorno said, how could there be poetry after Auschwitz?
Yes, I was aware of that quotation. And in fact, I included an epigraph from a poem by Paul Celan. And Celan was somebody who did find a way to write very powerful and beautiful poetry after the Holocaust. Celan, whose own parents perished in the Holocaust. But then Celan himself was not able to really survive the effects of that trauma, and he committed suicide in Paris, I think, around 1970. What Adorno said is quite resonant, and it makes people think. It may not have been absolutely accurate, because, of course, great art has been produced since the time of the Holocaust. But it was an important thing to say at that time.
The title. In the beginning, I thought, Gottfried is the savior. And when I finished the book, I wondered, or is music the savior?
The choice of the title, it was actually suggested to me by the publisher, by Simon & Schuster, by my editors there. I did come to embrace the new title, because I thought it functioned on various levels. One is that the savior, in its non-religious meaning, just as somebody who saves or rescues, it is that somehow Gottfried is hoping, he begins to hope and entertain the futile hope that he will be able to save people through his music. The other aspect of the word Savior, of course, refers to Jesus Christ, and there is this discussion of St. Matthew Passion, and there is Gottfried's own rather tortured relationship with his own religion, with his Christianity. And there is a moment about halfway through the novel where he enters a church and it's raining outside, and he's been unnerved by the fact that there was a Nazi rally going on just a few hundred feet away. But he enters the sanctuary of this church and he's trying to work out a great conflict that he has. And he looks up and he sees the statue of Jesus on the cross. The eyes seem to look at him half reproachfully, half with forgiveness, and he tries to embrace the hope of redemption through religion, but it doesn't quite work for him. I always say to people that it's not necessarily an enjoyable read. I hope that some of the use of language and the imagery will produce some kind of literary pleasure for people, but the story itself, the plot line, is not pleasant by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, it's quite remarkable that you achieved this literary success first time out, and I thank you so much for talking with me.
Lois, I thank you for your time and your interest.